Hey everyone, just wanted to tell you about another Paranormal Plus Club benefit before we get to the show tonight. We've been doing our paranormal courses and I have a new one to announce. Very excited. We're going to be doing a ghost hunting online class with Teresa RG. She calls herself a haunted housewife. She's been featured on national television shows like Paranormal Challenge, and in May, June, and July, she's going to be doing online sessions with us. And we'll all learn more about ghost hunting. I'm actually very interested because I've never been on a ghost hunt, believe it or not. So I am anxious to learn more from Teresa's expertise. And you can too, since you are a Plus member. Just go over to jimherald.net and you'll see their paranormal courses at the top. Click on that, and along with several other things, you will see the place to sign up for that. So I think that you will enjoy that, and we're very much looking forward to that class. And don't forget, April 5th, you can still sign up for the final class of Carol Obley talking about Igniting Your Spiritual Intuition. The first two sessions are up as an archive at jimherald.net, and you can see the third one live. So lots of fun things going on with the Paranormal Plus Club, that archive of over 100 shows, and the new shows we're bringing you now. I hope you're enjoying it. I thank you so much for being a member of Jim Herald's Paranormal Plus Club.
UFOs. Are they aliens? Government secret projects, the imaginings of disturbed individuals, or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Herald's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I'm Jim Herald. Glad to be with you once again. And I enjoy repeat guests, and this is someone who was with us really not that long ago, Thomas P. Fusco. He was with us in December on UFO Encounters, and we're delighted to have him back because there's some interesting updates that he has. Now, Thomas is an independent researcher who has devoted nearly three decades investigating the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena, with the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework that has eluded mankind for generations. He's been invited to speak as a guest on dozens of national and international radio programs. Now, we're going to talk to him because in even the short time, we're only talking about 3-4 months here, there has been some big developments in the area of supergeometry, and we're going to talk about that. Now, Thomas, welcome back to the program. Glad to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's great to be here.
Now, I got your excited email, and I want to set the stage for people. Certainly, we recommend that people go back and listen to episode 20 of UFO Encounters, where we talked about this in great depth. But you had mentioned that there are a lot of developments out there as it pertains to the theory of supergeometry that you presented in the book that we discussed before, Behind the Cosmic Veil. So before we talk about those new and exciting developments, can we just briefly go over that theory, what it is, to set the stage maybe for folks who didn't hear, and then let's focus on some of these new developments.
Yes, okay. In a very broad sense, my particular theory in trying to understand various aspects of paranormal phenomena, like things that go on in haunted houses and in ufology, I had come up with a model that involved the bending of space from a mechanism that actually lies outside of space-time. And also the collection of information, which is the supergeometry that I talk about.
Yes.
These different types of physical forms, information, structures that exist outside of space-time, and how that information materializes inside of these expanding pockets of space-time. And so the model not only gives answers to many of the fundamental questions about these type of paranormal events, but also sheds light on some of the pressing enigmas that have faced modern science for some time, certain fundamental questions about the way the universe is put together. And what was very exciting about the theory is that it's more than just a lot of the different types of metaphysical or philosophical speculations that have come before. This is a true scientific theory in that it makes physical predictions that are scientifically and experimentally testable. And that's where we have some exciting news to report.
So you've piqued my interest. What are these new developments just in the last couple of months here?
Well, what's interesting, there's a gentleman named David Roundtree, and he has a master's degree in engineering. He has held some very prestigious positions with acoustical engineering, and he's finishing up his doctorate in physics. And he's conducted some very, very interesting experiments in the field of EVPs, electronic voice phenomena. And what's interesting about this is that he's gotten these very strange results. And only, maybe a few weeks ago, about a month ago, he and I made contact on a talk show where he was also participating as a co-host. And essentially what we did was compared notes. And what we found out is that the predictions that are made by my theory are directly related with the results that he's been getting. In other words, his experimental findings are the exact kinds of findings that my model would predict would occur. And this is incredible and very, very exciting news. It's unprecedented in the field of paranormal research.
Now, did you have any awareness of his work? I mean, was it one of these great serendipitous things where he didn't know what you were doing and you didn't know what he was doing? And it really was meshing up in quite a remarkable way?
That's absolutely correct, Jim. I had an interview booked with a lady who was very much into the psychic field, and she knew that my subject matter was very much into the scientific end. So she wanted to bring in someone who she knew personally in the field as a co-host, and it happened to be David Roundtree. He had never heard of me, and I'd never heard of him, and so when we started talking and comparing notes, it's difficult to convey the excitement that I felt when he was telling me some of his findings.
Now, what were some of these experiments that he was doing that were specifically saying, you know, Thomas's theory makes a whole heck of a lot of sense because I'm able to replicate some of these effects?
Yes. If we go back to what I like to talk about in relating to like a haunted house and all the different types of paranormal events that that people observe, and what I talk about is an expanding bubble of space-time that would occur inside of a haunted house and what kind of effects that we would observe. And one of the effects would be that the pressure, the actual barometric pressure at the outer edge of this bubble would be higher than the barometric pressure that would be on the inside of the bubble. In fact, momentarily, there would almost be like a vacuum. And so he's been doing some very specific events or experiments during EVP events. And this was one of the findings that he had reached. He actually has detected this barometric differentiation. Another thing that would occur is that this expanding bubble of space-time would produce at its outer surface an electromagnetic field. And let's say, for example, and you know, I don't get too much into trying to talk about who done it, so to speak.
Right, right. You see that there's a, if I state it correctly, you see that there appears to be a cause and effect, but your bailiwick is not figuring out what that cause is.
As far as the perpetrator,
right.
As far as whether it's Dead Aunt Mary or some demonic force or that type of thing, I'm interested in concentrating on the forensics, so to speak, the actual physics of these events themselves. And so if we understand a vocalization, so to speak, or an intelligence as a coherent collection of information that is actually alive in some way by the way it interacts within itself, much like our mentality, if you could imagine us taking the human consciousness and just suspending that information separately from the physical brain that normally houses it, that gives you the kind of idea of this this extra physical information. Well, if you could imagine that that intelligence trying to speak a sentence, and that information would materialize inside of these expanding bubbles of space-time, what would actually happen, Jim, is that the very surface of that bubble in space-time would actually act like a speaker, like the paper of a speaker. It could give off several effects. One of them would be an acoustic effect, where it would actually vibrate the air molecules surrounding it, so that we would actually have a voice. We would hear a disembodied voice out of thin air, as they do here in these types of environments. But the other thing that would happen, Jim, is since the outer surface of this bubble is also producing electromagnetic field, if a vocalization, if an informational vocalization materialized inside of one of these bubbles, it would also give off an oscillation off of the surface of this bubble. And the frequency and amplitude would almost be like a modern record player, where the needle picks up the vibrations from the groove, and then the needle cartridge translates it into an electromagnetic signal that goes into the circuitry of the record player and translates it into sound. So we would have this same kind of an oscillation of the electromagnetic field on the outside of this bubble. And what it would predict is this, is that we would be able to take a recorder and place it inside of a vacuum so that no air molecules could reach the diaphragm of the microphone. And this electromagnetic oscillating field would actually induct itself upon the copper coils that are connected to the diaphragm. And so that would be transferred into the electronics of the recorder and produce a voice, even though it's inside of a vacuum. Well, David Rowntree has already experimentally verified that this can occur. He's picked up EVPs inside of a vacuum, and so demonstrated that it is indeed an electromagnetic phenomena, which is why it gets recorded on the recorder, but people don't hear it audibly. Another thing that it would predict is that we could get the same effect if we opened up the microphone and took a razor blade and removed the diaphragm from the recording mic and just had the coils that were once connected to it. We should also be able to pick up an EVP. And once again, he has conducted this experiment, and it verifies my model, because he's getting EVPs this way as well.
And as we discussed, is it fair to say that it's almost a grand unified theory of the paranormal?
Yes, but it even goes beyond that. My model, as you recall, gives a unified explanation. It gives a single set of what I call paranormal mechanics, just one set of principles that can show us how all these different kinds of events in a haunted house, like the cold spots, like the mystery breezes, EVPs, disembodied voices, feelings of heaviness, apparitions, malfunctioning of electrical equipment, on and on. They are all explained by this same model. But it even goes beyond that, Jim. It actually talks about the universe in a greater sense, a greater picture, as to how that's actually put together. So, for example, one of the things that my theory predicts is that there is no such thing as a graviton, a particle of gravity. And this would explain why physicists have been searching for this particle for decades, and have never been able to discover it. And so this also sheds light on those other kinds of problems.
Now, in regard to UFOs, explains that as well?
Well, yes. If you think about it carefully, the many of the aspects of UFOs that we observe and have been recorded are very similar to the kind of phenomena that we see in haunted houses. We do see examples of things materializing and dematerializing. We see examples of electrical equipment malfunctioning in near proximity to the event. We see these objects that in UFOs that accelerate, and they move through the air, through space, with absolutely no visible means of propulsion. And in haunted environments, we do have these kinds of poltergeist activities where objects seem to move of themselves with no local physical propulsion connected to it, like somebody picking it up and throwing it. They just move all by themselves. So my belief has always been that if UFOs are intelligently controlled spacecraft, they have actually cracked the code of creation, so to speak, that allows these types of paranormal events in haunted houses to occur. And they've come to an understanding of it, and they've actually built technology based on those principles. And this model that I've come up with gives us a theoretical roadmap by which we could crack that same code.
So you have your theory, you have what appears to be independent verification of its tenets and principles. Where do we go from here?
Well, one of the things that we need to do is that David and I need to devise a few more experiments that we can derive particularly from my model. So this is the way a scientific theory works. For example, I can use another experimental verification that we've gotten as an example. If we do have the bending of space locally in a haunted house, one of the things that we would be able to observe is that we would see a gravitational fluctuation, because we've known since Einstein that the bending of space is always associated with the presence of gravity. So one of the things that we would find is that we would see a gravitational distortion or a fluctuation in three, or what we would call three axes. In other words, three-dimensionally, so that it would be clear it would be a separate gravitational field than the gravitational field of the Earth itself. And David has also conducted these experiments and demonstrated that this is the case. Now, if that's so, then it shows us that it is absolutely possible. There's no question that we can create artificial gravitational fields and environments, and that these things would be isolated and operate independently from the predominant gravitational field of, let's say, the planet in which this second field was created. It would act independently of it. So, for example, what we're talking about, if we were to take, let's say, a frame, like a window frame,
right,
and we were to stretch a flexible rubber membrane across it, and then we were to put it on a set of legs, for example, so it was like a table. And if we pictured to ourselves that the top of the table would be the fabric of space-time that we're looking at from our dimensional realm that we normally operate in, and the underneath, where we can't see, is that superphysical realm, that realm that's outside of space-time but is actually an overlay to our physical realm. Now, if we put an object, like, let's say, like a baseball, and right, we laid it on that rubber surface table, we would see the baseball sink in,
right,
and we would see the rubber membrane depress around it, which would be just like what Einstein talked about with the curved space around physical objects. If we moved it across that rubber surface with our hand, we would see it move along, and we would see the rubber depression around that baseball move with it. It would travel right alongside with it. This would be normal motion, normal propulsion, because we can actually see our hand. We can understand the physical energy that's built into that hand, and we can see the structure of that hand and arm that directs that energy towards the baseball. But now, of course, paranormally, both in haunted house levitations, poltergeist activity, and in UFOs, we actually see the baseball move, but we don't see the hand. We don't see the propulsion means of it. It just simply isn't there in the physical realm adjacent to the baseball itself. So what we're talking about is creating an artificial well of gravity. If we pictured, let's say we have the baseball laying on this rubber sheet, and if we were to reach underneath and somewhere in front of the baseball, we would pinch that rubber and pull it down and right. create an artificial pocket in front of the baseball. The baseball would roll right into it. From our side of the table, looking at it above, we would see exactly what UFOs do and what levitations in poltergeist activity do. We would see the object move by itself with no means of propulsion. And so now we're getting, Jim, we're actually getting experimental results that are showing us how this kind of natural mechanism could be harnessed.
Now, do you have, I don't know if faith is the right word, do you have confidence that these experiments will be looked at in the broader scientific world seriously? Because sometimes, and I think we may have discussed this the first time around, if a paradigm comes around that does not match with the current paradigm, it's kind of, it can be, don't bother me with the facts, you know, that kind of thing. Do you feel that once you've conducted these experiments, that you'll be able to present them to the greater scientific community and have at least a fair hearing?
Yes, Jim. This is what's so exciting about this. Mr. Roundtree and myself, we believe we're the first researchers that are into the paranormal that are actually in a position to develop and present a comprehensive scientific paper at some point in the future to the scientific community explaining what this model is and how it was experimentally verified and what its consequences are. You know, one of the things that we're working on right now is the idea of time distortion. And this is another thing that Mr. Roundtree has demonstrated. If you go back to Einstein and what he demonstrated, that space and time are intrinsically linked together into a single thing that he called space-time. Well, if we're bending space, we're bending time as well. And so we should be able to detect a variation in time when these events occur. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, David Roundtree has actually conducted experiments to show this dilation in time at the very same moment that an EVP is recorded. Now, what we need to do is this. If we can work out through various types of more directed experiments where we can get a quotient, a variable that we say that with a certain amount of expansion in space, we are going to get a corresponding dilation in time that is going to be so many milliseconds per stretching of that space-time fabric.
Right.
And to be able to predict that and say, under these circumstances, in this type of geometric space, and in this kind of limited location, if we get this kind of a deviation, we're going to be able to assign an exact percentage to it. Now, when we can do that, the world will not be able to ignore this.
Well, I think it's fascinating. And again, I think what's important here, and again, I'm as much And I don't know if in the context of this conversation it's appropriate to say a believer, but I certainly think there's some strange things at play, and what causes them I don't know. And I do believe the vast majority of things that are claimed to be paranormal are totally explicable, but I also sense a certain amount, not a certain amount, a lot of skepticism from traditional science, and sometimes that's simply because the question is, well, can you scientifically replicate it? And the answer is usually from those who are in the paranormal field, well, you can't measure this with a test tube. The fact that if you can bring a peer-reviewed scientific paper to the fore that meets with all the experimental constructs and so forth, I think that's going to be extremely powerful. And hopefully, hopefully there'll be a fair reception to it.
Absolutely, Jim. And when what David and I am doing, our same approach is that we are studying the forensics, the actual physics of the phenomena itself. We're not presenting mainstream science with the unpalatable, confrontation of forcing them to reckon with the idea, oh, that we've proved the existence of an afterlife, or we've proved the existence of spirits, or something like that. What we're trying to just basically do is that based on these observations, based on these phenomena, we can demonstrate a model of materialization, of dematerialization, of teleportation, of actual time travel, of these kinds of phenomena, anti-gravity, and we can actually show how these kinds of possibilities are actually built into the natural way that the universe is put together. And all we have to do is learn how to harness them and direct them.
You know, I'm curious. Do you think, obviously, to take something from the theoretical stage into the on paper and analysis to bring it to fruition. So you feel that based on the initial findings and what you expect to find, that someday we may very well be able to time travel or teleport or all those things that have thus far been the province of science fiction?
Absolutely. And one of my paradigms is that there is a reason, I believe, that we conceive of these things in our minds and are able to hold on to them. And there's a part of all these kinds of concepts that we find innately believable, even if we don't know how they could physically be done. Something about time travel, something about teleportation, actually makes sense in our minds. There's something about it that's very logical. And so for me, what I look at is this, my paradigm is this, that the universe is put together according to a set of principles and laws. We don't fully understand all those principles and laws, but we know they're very consistent, Jim. We know that two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen combined in a molecule at standard temperature and pressure with a sufficient gravitational field to collect all these molecules in one place will create a clear liquid that we call water anywhere in the universe that it occurs, that those circumstances arise. The universe is put together one way. So when we understand it that way and we look at our human brains as a subset of that greater system, in other words, that the universe actually gave rise to our brains in the way that they operate. We understand that subsystems can never work in a way that's contrary to or outside of the greater laws and principles that govern the system in which they're a part. So the very fact that our human brains can actually conceive of these things and believe them and find them tangible, we're using that same order and structure within the convolutions of our brain that comprises the same laws and principles that create the universe in which that brain is a part. And so that means that these ideas must be consistent with the laws and principles which created the very brain that houses those ideas.
I'll just give you I'll give you a very mundane example of what you're talking about. Yesterday, I recently ended up getting an iPhone because I need it to keep communicated, particularly people who listen to these and are members of our Plus Club and so forth. I want to make sure I'm always in touch. So I finally broke down and got one. And I was standing in my driveway and I was talking to Siri, the digital assistant, and I had it in my hand and I was talking about it and I thought, oh my God, I'm Captain Kirk talking into his communicator. I mean, it was just... And the thing that has always fascinated me about, in a broader context, not something so silly, but in a broader context, all the things that we read about, going back to Jules Verne and even before that, in science fiction, and then they come to pass. And it almost makes you feel as though these things are meant to be and are a part of reality, just not the reality that we're in right now, but somehow we're able to tap into them. And I've always found it fascinating.
Absolutely. And my argument is that the very brain that conceptualized these concepts that eventually became physical reality was able to do so because our very brains are built upon the same laws and principles that put together the greater universe in which they're a part. It's a very different kind of paradigm, but once you think about it, you can quickly come to the conclusion that it couldn't be any other way. How could our brains be produced in a way that it actually they actually come up with thoughts and organized information that would be inconsistent with the patterns of laws and information that actually make up its physical structure? It would have to be consistent with that. So anything that we can conceive and hold in our minds as a coherent picture is possible to materialize it physically in the world of space and time.
No, it is a fascinating topic. Now, what is the time frame for this paper? I know, having a little bit of background in a research, you know, these things do not happen quickly at the snap of a set of fingers. But when do you think that this paper may be ready to be presented to the scientific world?
That's difficult to say. I can tell you right now what we're in the process is Mr. Roundtree is reading my book. He's doing a study of my particular work and my model. And what I'm in the process of right now is studying his particular experimental techniques, particularly with the type of equipment he's using, getting an understanding of it and exactly how it works and how he's put it together to get the particular results that he's getting so that I can understand the technological aspects of it and he can understand the roadmap, so to speak. This is what he calls my work. He says it's the first roadmap we've ever had. And then between the two of us, we can begin to say things, well, you know, if this is a parabolic bend, and it takes up this much space, and it's deflected by this many degrees, then we would expect these particular reference points, these geometric coordinates, to be a certain distance apart, and then we can set up our experiments and tune them in a way so that we measure that differentiation, and you know, then we can find the equivalent variable, so to speak, that when we get this much of a deflection, we can say it's so many points or so many percentages. And so that's the process that's involved, and I really don't know what the time frame is going to be on it.
Well, you promised us that you'll come back on one of our programs, perhaps both of you, and give us the results when the time comes.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yes, it'd be great. I know that David and I have already been on a couple interviews together, and they've been very fascinating. And yes, well, I'm sure we would be happy to do that.
Well, that is great. Now, Thomas, we're going to put the link to your website and so forth at jimherrell.net. Please refresh our memories again. Where do people go to find out this and all the other work that you're doing?
Everything about the book and where to get the book and related articles and my postings for interviews that I'm having that particular week All that could be found at www.cosmicveil, that's spelled V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com.
Well, we thank you for coming back on the show and sharing these exciting developments, and we look forward to hearing the next step and the next stage in your work. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in to UFO Encounters. Now, this wide-ranging discussion talked about UFOs and a lot of other things in the paranormal field, but it was a delight, and we hope that you enjoyed it. We will catch you next time on the program. Until then, keep your eyes to the skies. Bye-bye, everybody.